Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm in the studio with my co-host, Senator Dan McKay on the right.
Hey, everybody.
And our guest today, Shireen Gourbani, Salt Lake County Council member and representing the left. Welcome, Shireen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Are you comfortable with me calling you Shireen?
I am.
On
I
the
love
program?
It. Yes,
Al Gore,
you.
Your friend Bonnie. That's how she taught me to say her name.
Gourbani.
We have on this show, I can neither confess. I'll go ahead and I'll take all the bullets. I've been mispronouncing her name for this long, and so I'm grateful that she's here to correct us.
Yeah, keep it simple.
Shireen, how long have you been a council member at this point?
Oh, wow. It's been about 6 months, a little more.
And quickly sum up the experience. What is it? Was it what you expected?
Yeah, so county government is a place where I think a lot of people aren't necessarily paying a ton of attention, but it's a place where a lot of big decisions about your quality of life are made.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad you're there. And it's going to be fun to have you on the show. We're going to go to Asia and talk about the China-U.S. trade war and how it's escalated. This is not my favorite topic because for me it's economics upside down and it's a conservative party, the Republicans, that are doing things that are anti-conservative in my...
Anti-market,
yeah,
anti-conservative,
in my
all those things.
Be careful when you mess with tariffs.
Yeah.
Shireen, let's just go to you. How, from the left, how are you seeing all of this, increase in tariffs, the posturing of the president, the Treasury Department declaring China a currency manipulator?
Yeah. So I think it really brings a lot of uncertainty to people's lives, and that can be very scary. Mm-hmm. I ran for Congress in 2018, and being out on individuals' farms, talking to hog producers, and really understanding the impact that this has to our local economy snapped into full view for me what it means for our agriculture producers in particular, though I know it extends far beyond that.
Yeah.
When we're talking about what's happening.
But agriculture is a big export.
Uh-huh. And thinking about what it means to these individuals who have been able to sell their alfalfa, people in Enterprise, Utah, right? People in Millard County that rely on the stable pricing around hog production. It's very scary, and I think it's a really dangerous position to put the residents of Utah in.
Yeah. Dan, I thought Shireen said the right word when she said uncertainty.
Sure.
Because we have a prosperous economy right now, but the line between a prosperous economy and a struggling economy is really thin, and it happens quickly.
Sure. And it takes one major event, one way or the other,
for people to hunker down.
Yep, to go one way or the other. And so changes confidence. I will say, while I have not been a proponent of tariffs or the other trade scenario that we've run through, if you want to look at the strength of the U.S. position in this, quote, trade war, they started to talk about bans on imports of agricultural products from the U.S. The Chinese are playing and so is the U.S., playing a dangerous game of chess. Mm-hmm. And I think we learned from a lot this last couple of days. Being labeled a currency manipulator by a G7 nation is much more dangerous than anything the Chinese can throw at us from we're going to halt imports of production. Mm-hmm. And so I don't love that we're in a game of checkers, but we've been losing this game of checkers on a trade imbalance perspective for a long time. Chinese tariffs the other way are not favorable to U.S. imports, mm-hmm. and that's why you see some of the trade imbalance issues we see today. So getting outside of the very wonky economics element, if you get just to the chess and the politics of it, like we are on this show, I think President Trump and the Trump administration, they scored 1 point in the last couple of days over this. Now the Dow dropped 7%, dropped 700 points on Monday, regained those points, and then was up 300 as of Tuesday. And so all of this is really messy. And it
messy
will be
and uncertain.
Messy, uncertain,
and
all those
unusual
things.
Coming from a Republican administration.
But the thing is, at least it's being talked about.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
All things being considered, it's at least a discussion on the American people's mind.
So something else that's being talked about, and it's something that brings a dark cloud over all of our shoulders, but is the tragedies that happened in El Paso and Dayton. And has brought up renewed conversation about gun control. Mm-hmm. I want to hear from the left and the right on that. Just to kind of set it up, we typically talk about three causes of these mass shootings, mental health, mm-hmm. violent culture, and access to guns. Shireen, where would you like to start in sort of providing commentary from the left on what do we do about those three causes?
Yeah. I mean, it's a hard... issue to jump into, and thinking about, you know, the individuals who decided to go shopping on an afternoon in El Paso, or decided to go out to meet some friends on an evening in Dayton, and to see those lives extinguished as quickly as they were, is incredibly sobering. And I think is, as we're seeing nationally, there's just, we have to push forward on a conversation about all of them, right? And we know that there are things that we can do on all of these issues. As we were kind of talking about preparing for this, I think one of the things that's important for me to reiterate over and over again is that we know that individuals who struggle with mental health are not just a problem unique to us. When we think about the way that we have access to guns, and when we think about what that is, how quickly that can be leveraged in a situation where somebody is out of control, we have a problem. We have a problem here, yeah. And it's unique to us. And it's multifaceted. And in fact, we know that individuals who experience mental health struggles are often more likely the victims of crime. So for me, it's really bringing all of these pieces together. But a big part of it is really saying that we have it right now. We are seeing a rise in white supremacist terrorism in our country, and that we should be putting the same kind of attention on that that we were when we saw the attacks of 9/11 or any other escalation in terrorism. But we just aren't seeing the kind of marshaling of support to go mm-hmm. after it in the same systematic ways.
Shireen, when I hear you talk, and this is a way to ask Dan to comment, I kind of read between the lines that you've got mental illness in this country, but it exists in similar rates in other countries. You've got a violent, you know, access to popular culture and violence, but you have that in other cultures. I mean, Japan is the video game place, but doesn't have the kind of violence we have. What makes us different is access to guns, access to firearms. Dan?
I just, obviously, it's a nuanced topic that is tough to try and get your finger on what, you know, is actually mm-hmm. the cause. I would add kind of a fourth cause, right, that I think isn't being talked about as much, which is America itself is changing in its moral background and its moral aptitude. You look at, like you mentioned, the culture of Japan, right? Mm-hmm. They are fixed on their forefathers and not doing shame, and the culture in Japan is they're very strong, right? Mm-hmm. You look at other European countries, you have the same thing. You have the tide of the past, and you have everybody culturally looking at preserving the past, right? And preserving the legacy that they've been given. You look at America, and specifically, I will point my fingers at my liberal friends who, at the end of the day, want to throw out historical America and completely bleach the past. And at the same time, and the things that have made America who America is, and at the same time, shame Americans for being Americans or having pro-American sentiment. I think you look at that element, and I think you start to look at that along with the denigration of, like, the family and the attacks on their family and the family unit and those kinds of things. And as we have redefined what it means to be a family, we are starting to lose an identity that we own. And so I will say the fourth characteristic is, we in America are in a weird cultural transition, and we are dehumanizing human people, and as a result, lowering the cost for those who think shooting people might be a good idea. And a fifth element we didn't even talk about is the glorification of the press of these people that do these kinds of actions. We have nonstop coverage of these deals, and the press just, every news channel's all over it, and you cannot get them to shut up about it.
What if I said to you that you—
And here, we're part of it.
You complicated it with these other things. It is a complex problem. But what if I said to you that I don't think what we lack is solutions. I think we lack courage. What if I said that to you?
I totally disagree.
Okay, well, the Deseret News did something interesting, right? Their House editorial wrote about, I'm going to call it a 21-day challenge, mm-hmm. where they said, get legislative leadership in a room, empower Mike Pence, our vice president, to lead it. And if in 21 days you can't come out with some solutions to this gun violence, shame on you.
But that's
a manifestation of leadership courage.
We would be so much better off with a focus on seatbelts. We'd be so much better off with a crosswalk safety program. We'd be so much better off as far as statistically, nationally, and the things that are hurting Americans today that are actually hurting us in greater proportion than they are to other countries as well.
You look at our deaths from vehicle fatalities and distracted driving, it's much worse.
I think that takes away from solving the problem.
Right,
we don't need to talk about sidewalk safety.
No, I'm just saying, look at propensity of problems,
Well,
Natalie.
I'd like to know
where's the biggest. Where's like, the biggest problem? Where are we going to make the biggest good? If we're really trying to value human life, how are we going to fix
human
life?
But I feel like
life?
The public's asking for him to address this issue. Shereen?
Well, and I'm just wondering, what's your appetite for this to continue? Because what we're seeing is that it's increasing. We are seeing hate crimes increase. We are seeing mass shootings increase in this country. We know that right here in Utah, we are fifth in the nation on suicides, and many of those individuals choose to pick up a gun. There is a specific correlation here to the access that we have, the availability that we have, and frankly, the unwillingness for many individuals to take their own gun safety into their own hands and make sure that those guns are safely stored in their homes. So I understand your frustration. I understand what you're saying. But I think that we have a particular trifecta, and maybe it's we can say it's multifaceted, level of layers coming into what is happening in this country. But the fact is that we have to have the courage to deal with it, and we aren't seeing that, because instead what we do is deflect to all of the other things that are problematic that are happening around us, when we could have take at least a small bite on one of the pieces that we know would
change.
Shereen,
what's the top thing you'd like to see happen? Just real quickly, and then I'll ask Dan you the same question.
I mean, it's tough, right? Because for me, I, as a person who's been told to go back to where I've come from, am taking particular exception to the way that rhetoric is being used by the highest office in this country. Mm-hmm. So thinking about how we're talking about violence in our community, how we're talking about dehumanizing other people, that feels real to me in a way that is out of bounds for the individual who is sitting mm-hmm. in that office. So dialing back that rhetoric in a way that is meaningful, that is conscientious, and that is working on building communities up together. But one thing that we could do that there is mass support for is background checks on gun purchases. That's something that is widely supported.
Dan, top thing you'd like to see?
You know, everything you look at studies from the RAND Corporation, look at studies from just third-party studies from universities all across the country that show background checks aren't going to change these mass shootings. I mean, so really, honestly, I do, and I think about this on a regular basis. I have sat around and thought about this on numerous occasions trying to figure out what really makes a difference. And I will tell you what I believe really will make a difference has nothing to do with lawmakers, has nothing to do with D.C., mm-hmm. has nothing to do with state lawmakers, has nothing to do with any city council. It's going to what matters. Talk to your freaking neighbors. You really want to talk about what matters? Get to know the people around you.
Yeah, you
there
don't see
are
government
people
as the solution.
And I will say this. More and more you see people driving themselves further into holes of depression because no one's reaching out to them.
From
you want to know what the problem is? The problem is we're letting each other out and be alone and isolated, and that's what's causing these kinds of things. And if you really want to deal with it, I guess maybe the government can add a few more holidays so that we reach out to our neighbors.
I mean, one of the things that we do know from our own history is that when we did have an assault weapons ban, we did see fewer mass shootings with that.
I was just going to say, from the political middle, I'd like to see more mental health intervention and funding, and then I would like to see an assault weapons ban. Mm. This is Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I'm with Shereen Gourbani and Senator Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shereen Gourbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We're having a lively conversation. We've been talking.
Center. You want to lock government leaders in a room. That sounds like, we're having like total like
a
Stalinist behavior.
Productive discussion about gun control and about trade policy, but we're going to move local. And I want to talk about Ambassador John Huntsman, who dropped the news this week that he's going to resign his ambassadorship, I believe effective in October, and he's coming back to Utah, and he's actually saying to consider a run for Utah's governor.
Wow.
Did you expect that, Dan?
Yes.
Okay. I don't. I mean, I think he's going to come back, and he's not going to do it. We can
really
talk more about that. Oh. Shereen, any surprise to you here in the political world that you traffic in?
So it's not a surprise to me as well, but I am interested how it will shape the race.
Yeah. Well, so my thinking is that he's been governor before. He left it. It's a really hard job. You're owned by the state 24/7, 365, and that he'd be a much better senator.
Oh, interesting.
I think Senator Lee is the person that should be thinking about this return, not Spencer Cox. But I'm getting way ahead of myself.
Governor. You like Mike Lee for governor?
No.
Oh.
I think he's having fun with me. I think Ambassador Huntsman will ultimately, if he wants to stay in political office, it's the U.S. Senate that would be the best fit for him. But that's just Natalie Gochner just putting it out there.
Interesting.
Are you thinking in particular the Foreign Service experience, having that?
Yeah. He's a diplomat. He's a negotiator. He's I would say a great speech maker. Mm-hmm. And a governor, someone who, and he's done it before, so it's going back, you know. And I worked with Governor Leavitt for so many years, and the thought of him going back to governor, I just don't see that. So it's odd for me to think of Governor Huntsman doing that. But if he did it, boy, would it change up the race. Dan, you're a political mind. How does that shake up the race, both on the Democratic side and the Republican side?
Well, I was just trying to look through the canvas results from 2008 from the Republican primary.
Uh-huh.
So everybody always wants to talk about, you know, John Huntsman carried every county in 2008 and how, you know, how that broke down. Right?
Popular guy and 80% approval rating,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Right. And he ended, you know, he ended his term. You know, a lot of people say, well, he left early. And, as you know, no, this isn't a Chaffetz thing. John Huntsman left to go be the ambassador under a Democratic president to one of our most difficult trade partners, China.
And your distinction there is he left to serve our country.
He left to serve.
Where,
right?
Chaffetz left to be a Fox commentator.
Well, and so there, and a lot of people see a difference between those
two. I totally agree.
If you look at the
service, I think there is.
So when you come back, I personally think it's pretty cool. You know, guy's been an ambassador for a number of years. He's been around the world. He's seen all these things. He run for president. And in that process, he wants to come back to Utah and be part of, like, his home. I'm in. Like,
so
I love
how does it
stuff.
Affect Cox, Spencer Cox, a lieutenant governor? How does it affect our former speaker, Greg Hughes? How does it affect Amy Winder Newton? These are three people that have said they're likely to join in.
Well, and I think for months, everybody's been trying to, you know, do the math and the calculus of what it means for John Huntsman to be in the race versus out of the race. I think it changes the equation for everybody with him in the race. I don't think he's, you know, you look at the resignation, you look at the timing, you hear all the gossip about potentially running, and now the resignation. And I think, and then you see, you know, if you're not Facebook friends with Mary Huntsman, but former First Lady of Utah, mm-hmm. she's been talking about, you know, the return and how they still have things to do in Utah. You start to hear talk like that, he's going to run.
Okay.
And I think that calculus will change for everybody. And honestly, you saw Spencer Cox, you know, kind of throw some shade, you know, towards the Huntsman today about...
Tell our listeners what he did.
You know,
I haven't seen it.
Yes. So on Twitter, he talked about he's not one of the three prominent political families in Utah, but, you know, he feels like he's still going to, you know, be a strong candidate and John Huntsman will make him a better candidate type of thing.
Interesting.
So that'll
good
be...
Good for Cox.
I think that is a very interesting
way
to
And the three families
the
would be Eccles, Miller, and Huntsman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shereen,
no,
let's
right.
bring you into the conversation. How did you see this changed any of the political calculus
and
or
And will
dynamics?
A Democrat win as a result of this? No.
Inviting.
Never mind. Dumb question.
Well,
sorry.
I think Governor Huntsman is the Democrat in the race.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
I do, too. So I think it's an interesting question. You know, there are a lot of Democrats who I would say have a goodwill towards Spencer Cox and feeling like that would be a voice that they could live with in the governor's mansion, right? And thinking about now what it does to introduce a person who was widely respected and, you know, quite moderate, did a lot of great things for the state in the eyes of Democrats, I think really does make it a very complicated and interesting place to be. Will it be sort of a fight over the middle, or will it force somebody to move pretty far right? And what will that do to kind of sour people who I think otherwise may have had quite a bit of goodwill built up for a particular candidate?
Yeah. We mentioned and Spencer Cox, I guess, tweet and whatnot did this, but the three big families, big Utah families that could potentially be in the race. So here's the Huntsman. Greg Miller. Yeah, Greg Miller is someone who they've talked about potentially entering the race. But the one that popped this week, a Deseret News article by...
Spencer Eccles.
Yeah, Amy Donahue,
yeah.
I believe is her name.
Mm-hmm.
That mentioned that Spencer P. Eccles, so the son of Spence Eccles, someone who led the Governor's Office of Economic Development out of the Great Recession, he led our state. Could that one play out, Shereen? Do you know Spencer?
I don't, no.
He's a wonderful young man.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think all of this is really interesting, especially when we think about how you know, we're still waiting for a Democrat to emerge and to be talking about this.
We ask everybody that comes on the program, give us names. Can you give us any names?
I do know that, you know, people have been approached. There have been...
Is it you?
Yeah, that's not me. Oh. You heard it here first. A number of individuals being asked. But I do think there's a real debate to be had in our state and about where we're headed. When we think about, you know, our education funding, when we think about, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that we're fifth in the nation in suicides, when we think about the fact that we have more uninsured children in Utah this year than we did last year. And when we think about the actual, you know, fact that we're the third most toxic state in the nation because of what we are doing to our environment, I'd love for us to be having a debate that's beyond the confines of a Republican lane. And I would love for that to be a really robust and really honest discussion about where we think we're headed.
Yeah. Dan, anything else you want to say about
the governor's race? In other words, the Democrats have no candidate. And they're looking forward to supporting either Spencer Cox or John Huntsman.
Well, maybe Huntsman should come back and run as a Democrat, right? Like, what do you think about
then
that?
Then we could have a really
competitive
race. You
want to talk about being fed up with maybe what's happening at the top of your party?
That would throw the independents into a flurry.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because, Hey, we're...
Not going to happen.
We are,
a flurry. Yeah.
You know, in the final week of the mayoral primary for Salt Lake City. So we do need to spend a few minutes on that. Dan, I'm going to let you kind of lead this.
How is Shireen not running? I thought every Democrat in the state was running for the Salt Lake mayor race. Let's see. You know, you hear the latest poll results, and you have Senator Robles moving into, you know, a really close race with former Senator Jim DeBacchus.
This is showing that you've worked with her a long time, because most people would call her Senator.
Oh, dang it.
Escamilla.
Oh, okay.
She was Senator Luz Robles and then became Senator Luz Escamilla. But keep going.
I still make that mistake on the Senate floor if it makes you feel any better. But she is she's a good lawmaker. And so it would be interesting to see how that works. I'm really interested to see how this race goes. Unfortunately, it looks like kind of, you know, Aaron Mendenhall may sneak in and would then probably push Luz out, which I think would be sad because I think I'm looking forward to a DeBacchus versus Escamilla race. I mean, for some reason, that race just looks really interesting to me. But I also think Aaron would do a good job with the with it as well. So it's, man, I don't think you can lose with those three candidates. I think Salt Lake City will be.
Shireen, love your reaction. I mean, as I toss it to you, I just want to mention I had the opportunity to moderate a debate of the eight candidates for the Sierra Club in the Salt Lake City Library Auditorium. It was really unbelievable to me how civil the candidates were, how collegial, how informed, how articulate, and it was really an incredible discussion.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's been uplifting in a time that feels kind of dark in American politics to be able to look to the local level, I think many places across our state and see really genuine debates about where people are coming from. And in part, I would actually love to also just give a bigger plug because I know that we're talking about Salt Lake City, but this, you may have a ballot sitting in your mailbox. You may have a ballot sitting on your table. There are a number go vote. Yeah. So the date is the 13th. You can, if that mail-in ballot is postmarked by the 12th, and you can get that in that way. Early voting is underway right now, but there are many municipalities across Salt Lake County that do have primaries and in fact, across the state. So please take a close look at your at your ballot, check your mail.
Do you have any endorsements in the race?
No, I don't. But what I will say is this. I think that we do have an incredible crop of individuals. And for me, it's really important that we're looking at who's talking about what that role can actually do. What is the role of the Salt Lake City mayor? And are we talking about things that are in the purview of city government? And having a real firm grasp on that is something that's important to me. And I think we have a number of strong leaders. I certainly have my candidate, and I'm really excited about the strength of many of the candidates in this field.
Right? Oh, that was so weak. You got to
come on,
give us something
Well, I applaud.
I'm just giving her a hug.
I applaud Shireen in the sense that this is a great group of candidates. Yeah. And so, Dan, we've got to go to gripes. Do you have one you want to share with our listeners?
It turns out we didn't get to it today, so I'll just make it my gripe that it turns out the legislature can still make laws. The Supreme Court overturned or did not grant the ability for those who were appealing the medical marijuana law that the legislature passed.
Yeah.
Supreme Court said, sorry, we're not going to accept that case. So I guess, sorry, people, strap down your freedoms because the legislature can still make laws.
Yeah, Shireen, your gripe.
So, I mean, my gripe maybe on that note would be our state legislature overturning the will of the voters a couple of times this last year. But I'm going to go with one that's a little bit outside of politics because it's one that I'm very passionate about. So I believe that sandwiches that people call wraps are garbage. And a burrito is the only appropriate wrap. And if it's not a burrito and you've put it in a wrap, especially if that wrap is green or sun-dried tomato, it's garbage.
I love it. I'm going to go with a gripe of because these Salt Lake mayoral candidates are so strong, I would like to see four of them advance rather than just two. I know that's crazy.
It's going to be hard to change that at this point.
It sure is. But I think that you've got a group of candidates that are worthy of a longer debate and more exposure. So
I think the loser should automatically be the governor candidate.
You got it.
Great idea.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been joined by Shireen Gourbani and Dan McKay. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. And our program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.